I suppose this is the part where I say, I'm Elizabeth Scanlon, and this is the American Poetry Review podcast. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
It is so nice to see you again here in the studio. I have such a funny thing in my head right now, which I am only going to bring up because as I was thinking about it, as I was walking here, I was like, this is almost a poetry prompt. Bear with me. So my son, this morning, this very morning, went on a field trip with his science class. He's a senior in high school. He went to an actual gross anatomy lab, like a cadaver lab,
cool.
At one of the local colleges. And he said afterward, texted, whatever, that it was cool and that it was interesting. But he said, do you know... And the thing that he said was a thing that I had never heard before in my life. He said, do you know that the smell of formaldehyde makes people hungry? And I was like, nuh-uh. Why are you kidding me? And he was like, no, it's a thing. Look it up. And I did. And apparently it's a thing. So here's why I mentioned that. It's just because I was like, as I was Googling, as one does when you're mystified by a piece of information, I wasn't finding any satisfactory answers. Like, apparently this is an observed phenomenon that has been documented, that some significant percentage of people who are in gross anatomy labs, like, actually do have, like, this, whatever you call it, appetite stimulant reaction to the smell of formaldehyde, which is disgusting. But they don't seem to know why.
Could it be one of those things, like most tour guides, I make up most of the things that I say.
Right?
Does it need to be that this is a fact?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's not necessarily a fact, but there is enough evidence of it on the internet that, like, it's an observable phenomenon.
Yeah.
So the thing that in my mind was then turning into a poetry prompt is that, like, if they haven't explained it, it leaves the door wide open for poets to write that poem. Why does formaldehyde make us hungry? Because it's so, I don't know. It's
alarming.
It's so macabre in a way, but it's also just a fascinating, unexplained thing. Anyway.
Do you think that would hold up in court?
What do you mean? Like the smell of the formaldehyde made me do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why?
I don't think it's a hunger for cadavers.
No, I know that. I know that. But
still,
if there's nothing
else
available, that's a crime, right? To tamper with.
This has really taken a turn, you guys. I was just talking about, like, getting a bagel after class or something.
Let me see if I can wrangle us back into poetry world.
Okay.
It made me think of, I retaught my favorite contemporary book of poems.
Yeah.
I don't know what contemporary means anymore, but Headwaters by Ellen Bryant Voigt, which is a book I go back to over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different ways that she gets into the poems. But mostly the form is some piece of information either about an animal or an experience or some experiential information that moves towards a question. So I'm thinking that the prompt is there. Yes, there's the poetry prompt of why does formaldehyde make you hungry, but also just that those great poems that start with some weird piece of information that is absolutely true and just get you to a question.
Right, exactly.
That, yeah.
That is what I'm getting at. Is that
absolutely.
Is that like the thought process that I was having as I was just mulling that over, is that like that it does scratch an itch for me of like where do we begin in our kind of poetic imaginations of like a lot of it has to do with just telling ourselves stories, right? Like, and creating scenarios in which like I have a theory, whether it has any basis in reality or not. So there you have it. That's my thought of the day.
So we're coming up on one of the great moments in the editorial year, which is the Kunitz Prize.
That's right. May 15th.
That's the deadline.
That is the submission deadline as it ever was.
And what's the deal? You can be any age whatsoever.
That's not right. No, you have to be younger than 40.
That's right. Poets under 40.
Poets under 40.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. Yeah.
Steven's just realized how old he is.
Every day. And it's an exciting prize. Kunitz is an exciting poet.
He is.
How did it come to be the Kunitz Prize? Do you know?
Oh, I think, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but we'll say it again. The Kunitz Prize was established, we established the Kunitz Prize, I should say, in 2010 after receiving a gift from the estate of Stanley Kunitz after he passed. And the only stipulation on that gift was that we name an ongoing endeavor in Stanley Kunitz's honor. And so this was what we chose to do. And in part, you know, people like to say that it's ironic that it's for younger poets because Stanley Kunitz lived to be so... I'm stumbling because I can't remember whether he was 100 or
was over
or
100.
More, but he was. He was like over 100.
Or something. Kunitz is kind of wild because he wrote for an insanely long amount
yes.
of time.
Uh-huh.
He was doing formal things in his early right. career, and then he followed the trends of the 60s and 70s into a less formal realm, and then he kind of put it all together at the end. I mean, there was a lot more movements than just three right. over, because he was writing for a really long
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Really an amazing poet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a favorite Kunitz poem?
Oh, gosh,
that's
I don't
a
know.
Better question than how. That's what I meant to ask when I said, how did the prize come to be?
I don't know off the top of my head, honestly, but I do just really honor and am so impressed by how many poets' lives he touched
yeah.
over his career. And that too is why we named this prize in particular for him, is that he was one of the great mentors, right? Like, he really extended himself to so many younger writers and really advocated for them. Mm.
There's a great a portrait of him at the National Portrait Gallery, which it's the only portrait I remember, maybe because I like Kunitz, but but anyway.
Stanley he had a Kunitz. Way with a chapeau. He could wear a hat really well. I just always
I don't
think
know at him. All what you just said. What is that word? Chapeau?
Chapeau. A hat. You know. He had a nice little
French
jaunty angle on a hat.
That's great.
The first round of Kunitz Prize submissions that I was around for reading was 2 years ago. So the eventual winner of that was Susan Nguyen with Impossible Deer, who won mm-hmm. the 2022 Kunitz Prize. And I think about this poem still to this day, which is so long later
no,
now.
But I mean, 2 years is a good amount of time to sit
yeah.
with a poem. Like, what stands out to you about it? What?
I really remember the like very tight simile, bright as a radish is
yes.
one that I think about often.
So good.
It's so simple. It's not like overwrought at all. It's a simple adjective and a simple noun, but it like really feels resonant and
yeah.
It's really stuck in my memory. Should I read this poem?
I would love that. Yes.
Okay.
Please do.
Cool. Impossible Deer. When I visit Virginia in winter, Mom says she's been seeing prints on our snow-covered deck. Deer, she tells me. I laugh. Deer can't jump that high. Maybe possum or raccoon. But she doesn't know what those are, not my English words for them. And I don't know how to translate. I'm frustrated now at how often our conversations go like this, faltering, me punishing her with silence for not understanding, how my first instinct towards my mother is never kindness. Who am I to tell her what is possible? Just this morning, looking out from the deck, I saw the fire of 8 cardinals burning in our honeysuckle, an omen. Maybe that was my mother too. One landed on the snow, bright as a radish, as the pendant my mother gifted that I refused to wear, too showy, too loud. My mother has already done the impossible, making it here. What have I done? I want to believe that I can be someone else, a better daughter. These are my mother's, dear, I'll tell everyone. They leap into flight on cold nights and return as red-feathered birds spilling across the sky.
Thank you.
I think it's...
It's a killer diller. Yeah. I mean, really, it's just such a good one.
I really admire the way, like, this poem, like, all of the things transform in this poem. Like, the way that, obviously, the, like, central image of the deer transform into birds and the, how that opens up, like, hope for the possibility of the mother-daughter relationship transforming.
Yes.
I think it's really beautiful.
It is. It's so beautiful. And I think one of the things I remember our deliberations on this year as well, and that that this poem really exemplified something that I think we're always looking for, which is the juxtaposition of strong imagery with also being able to say something that has like emotional content or like revelatory thinking.
Yes.
Right. And that those two things married together are so interesting and so memorable. I mean, by the time we get into like the very center of the poem, to the lines, how my first instinct towards my mother is never kindness. Like, I feel like that is so earned. Mm-hmm. Like we're ready to hear that kind of
confession,
because the poem has already done the work of like creating a whole scenario for us and a whole sensory reality, mm-hmm. right? So good, so good, so good. 2024 will be our 15th year of the prize, which is exciting because I didn't really realize until counting them up recently that we had arrived here already. And it all still feels really fresh and new to me. But that's something that I really enjoy about the Kunitz Prize is that we do, because it is a prize for younger poets, it kind of creates this archive of youthful work, you know, that, I mean, some of the first winners of the prize were Ocean Vuong and Alex Dimitrov and Katie Peterson, all of whom have gone on to produce amazing books and write amazing poems. And so it does feel especially tender and special to me that we have these early poems of theirs in this prize history as well. Oh, that's just me anyway.
There's a poem that I would love to also read by a poet I have not read before, Jared Harrell.
Jared Harrell.
Harrell. It's called Veterans Day 2014.
Yes. Actually, Stephen, you may be right. It may be Harrell. I am always asking myself about pronunciations, but I think you're right and I'm wrong. But please do. Please read that poem.
Veterans Day 2014. Lately, I've been praying for life to surprise me, like a pitch black living room, primed to fracture into song and streamers, a hand on my shoulder yelling, "Didn't think we remembered, did ya?" Lately, my counter thoughts have been riddled with guilt, the way a stray wallet excites before shaming, though shame lasts, and bitters the tongue. I saw a coverage yesterday of a third beheading while doing crunches on an exercise ball. The ball, I remember, was clown nose red, and never before had I felt so damaged, so lucky and absurd. I drove home, drowning in the hum of sports radio, grateful for the scores and in-depth analysis. Someone had become a restricted free agent. Someone had been traded and was finally coming home. This poem reminds me of a 2015 version of Skunk Hour by Robert Lowell.
Okay.
And what...
Say more.
What occurred to me, I was reading through it And Skunk Hour is a poem that I love for its form. I love it so much for mm-hmm. that moment when it hits. You know, he's walking around among the love cars on the hill. It's a creepy line, actually.
Right.
He's like the cars parked so that teenagers and whatever can have sex without anybody knowing.
And he's creeping.
right? Or not. Or he's just walking around lonely. But yes. It's very clear that he's so lonely. And then, you know, and then there's the ellipsis. And he says, my mind's not right. Mm-hmm. And it's such a great confessional moment of like, again, we were talking about doing the work to earn the confession, that moment just lands. So I'm reading this poem and going through this day, praying for life to surprise me, all of these, you know, difficulties. And I'm going, okay, there's got to be a confession coming. I had that thought as I was preparing. And then it says on an exercise ball, period. And I thought, oh, there's confession coming. The ball, I remember, was clown nose red, and never before had I felt so damaged. I was like, oh, that's Skunk Hour. Boom. Like, you know, my mind's not right.
He pulled a Skunk Hour.
That's a classic. And it just made me feel like, you know, like bringing back, it's not like it's molded on that or something, but that sort of formal control in the poem.
Right.
Just made me so happy. It's a very sad poem.
Yeah, I was like, I see what you're saying now. I didn't see it at first because to my mind, Veterans Day 2014 is sort of in like emotional resonance, kind of the opposite of Skunk Hour because it avoids despondency, right? It lands in a place mm-hmm. where he is feeling, you know, both lucky and absurd, right? That he, that this speaker has... I love that ending. Someone had been traded and was finally coming home.
Right.
You know, the shiver of that, even though, you know, he's displacing it, he's moving it one sort of move to the side by framing that as like sports talk, mm-hmm. you know, but that it still holds the heart of coming home, of like being lucky and returned, you know.
What a great phrase too, the hum of sports radio.
Mm-hmm.
I heard this years ago and I think it's so true. And I hear it constantly, this thing that said that we're going to, as we move into election season mm-hmm. 2024, we're going to need places to go that
aren't about Trump.
That we're not fractured.
I had to say it.
Yeah, but where we're not fighting, where we don't have like this or that. It's like, who cares? Right. I mean, like ultimately, who cares? But even the people who really care know that who cares?
Oh, Steven.
I love sports radio for the who cares of it. You know?
Okay. I got you. Mm-hmm. I got you.
I really love the phrase restricted free agent here too. Uh-huh. I like love poems that take a phrase that you don't expect to see in a poem and put it in a poem. And then it like makes you think about that phrase totally differently. Like think about what those actual words mean.
Right. It gives you new listening.
Yeah.
It gives you a new, a new experience, right?
Right.
Of that piece of language.
Which I hear in my life, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also think the ending is especially resonant, like immediately after the what sort of tonal things are with the phrase restricted free agent? It's like not... Mm-hmm. It's a little bit silly. Like it's a little bit like
it's oxymoronic.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But it also has the mark of like that kind of professionalized language where you know that somebody's kind of like, razzle dazzling you. Like I'm going to give you this phrase, like
snake oil vibes.
that confers authority upon me. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah. And then to go from restricted free agent, which like doesn't mean anything. It like doesn't mean anything. And then finally coming home means everything.
Yes.
It's like extra resonant in that.
Right. In that context. Well, and that's the thing where like he takes this phrase, again, we're leaning hard on restricted free agent here, but it does a lot of work in this mm-hmm. placement in the poem where it's like, he takes a phrase that in sports talk is a little bit like, whatever, but in this context actually feels deep. Like,
you all have to unpack the whatever there.
that it feels like a, you know, just a...
Oh, it's so categorical. It's like, well, you're a free agent, but you're a restricted free agent, right?
Right. It's like scientific. They put people on the injury list, parentheses, hamstring. Like, it's like, you know, a category in a category, and it like is down to your body, but this is, you know,
it also gets at the idea that somebody has ownership over where you're allowed to live and be, which does transition into someone's been traded, as in they're going somewhere, but where they're going is finally home, which obviously resonates with the title and the poem. You know.
We love it. We love it.
Thanks for listening. This has been the American Poetry Review podcast. Follow us on all of the things: Facebook, Threads, Instagram, the clouds. We'll see you next time.